This is the Nielsen Norman Group UX Podcast.
I'm Samita Tinkala. We have a special bonus episode for you with one of our co-founders, Don Norman, and Sarah Gibbons, Vice President at NNG. Now, in this episode, we focus on one question. What will the role of designers be as AI and other technologies expand? As someone relatively newer to this field and discipline, when compared to Don and Sarah, I've always valued the insights from those who have navigated through significant technology shifts like the one we're experiencing with AI today. AI is changing faster than we can sometimes process, and it will probably feel like that for a while. The recent tech layoffs have also not spared UX professionals, adding to the uncertainty about our future roles in this rapidly changing environment. While there's a lot we don't know about AI, I hope you still find this conversation as encouraging I did, leaving you embracing uncertainty as a potential opportunity. Okay, Sarah and Don. As we know, new technologies are, well, technology, and they offer great opportunities for designers, but if they develop the skills to take advantage of these opportunities. So what do you, or what will be the role of designers as AI and other technologies proliferate and grow more powerful?
So I think, first of all, I think start using them now. That in and of itself is the most important, I think, message for our audience is use them, learn them, don't be scared of them. I think you will quickly learn as a user how horrible the user experience is. And I think it's a really interesting kind of paradox because the technology itself, we don't even know what it's quite capable of yet. And I think that's going to continue to change and thinking about its impact that it can have across so many different industries and verticals and in these kind of niche areas is incredible, but only if people know how to use it. And so I think that, there's a lot of doomsdayers out there that AI is going to replace all of us and that society is going to use it wrong. And I think that apprehension is appropriate, but I don't think that it has to be at the cost of optimism. And I think we, as designers, are uniquely situated to understand how people are going to be able to use and leverage this technology and make it more feasible to actually leverage. So your question, right, which is how are designers going to play a role in AI? Well, I think there's two ways to think about it. It's the designers that are going to design these tools that are actually usable. And then it's how we ourselves as practitioners can leverage these tools. And they're two very different conversations and audience. And I actually want to start, I think, with the latter because it's probably more of our audience. Which is how do you use these tools in your everyday? And I always think about it as an assistant or an intern, right? It's not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
You're going to need to double check the work and you don't want to assign or hand off a really important deliverable because that would be the equivalent of an intern doing it. But I think in terms of starting to play with it, whether it's shaping an early research plan, and getting ideas for different tasks. I use it a lot in ideation. So I can gather a lot of different ideas really quickly. And then I use it at the very end of the design process to kind of fine tune something that I've produced. And I think that there's a lot of different ways and places that designers and practitioners can start leveraging AI. And right now it just starts with actually signing up and using some of these tools.
Yeah, you gave a complex answer, so I had to write down little notes along the way.
I thought you were going to show us something.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. So first of all,
even better,
you have to remember that these tools are really young. They've been out about a year. And so what is happening now is that it has surprised everybody, including the people who developed them, about how, first of all, how what kind of capabilities they have, and second of all, how popular they have become. But let me tell you that in 5 or 10 years, the interaction will be completely different. Even within 5 years, it'll be very, very different. So don't get caught up on the details of today or the crazy people who are saying it's going to move off in this direction or that direction. The answer is nobody knows. And second, don't get too caught up on learning how to be an expert at today unless you realize that tomorrow is going to require different skills. So look at the notion of prompts and what's called prompt engineering. Everybody who's developing these say, that's not the way we should interact. That yes, today we have to learn how to be good at developing the prompts, but that's going to disappear or change dramatically because it's not the best way of instructing. But as Sarah said, yeah, but as Sarah said, it's also like you hired this new intern who's smart but doesn't know the field or something. And so you ask them to do a job and they do it, but it wasn't at all what you expected. And so you have to, well, prompts, if you will, change the instructions or give them guidance and so on. So it's, you have to remember, well, first of all, I know this field quite well because the basis for today's field was done in my laboratories. Actually, not by me, but my coworker and colleague, David Rummelhart. We did many papers together. David and some of our postdocs, especially Jeff Hinton, helped develop the layers that are now true in the neural networks. And Dave Rummelhart helped develop the back propagation algorithm that is used to set the weights. And we already knew in those early days that these things can be very powerful, but you can't understand what they're doing. And so we thought it was built on the model of the brain, and it somehow could be useful for understanding how the brain works, but it's just as difficult to understand because we understand how to build them. We understand the theory. We understand exactly what we put into it, but it's this weight structure where the number of weights can be in the billions. And that's what determines what it knows, and billion numbers, you can't interpret it very easily. But the other important thing is it's a pattern recognizer. It recognizes patterns, and that's why it has to be trained on so much history, so much information. But it doesn't have any intelligence, so it doesn't know what it's talking about, and it has no morals, it has no ethics. And so it's very limited while also being very powerful.
And actually quite I think that's a really good point, Don, because if you think about that, it's actually extremely complementary to what we as designers have been fine-tuning throughout our careers,
yes,
which is empathy, which is more of the qualitative pattern recognition, which is curiosity, right? And so it's actually, to me, a really complementary tool to a lot of the critical skills that we've always been applying. Curiosity, if you can call that a skill, but I really believe it is. I think, Don, it's what has actually made
I try
really
to train people into being curious and stopping and saying, that's interesting.
That's right.
By the way, people you're with hate that when we're having a conversation and I say, oh, look at that. I've never seen that before. But by the way, the machines, the system today, some people claim they show empathy, but that's because it's following patterns. And so when you give a sad story, it will say, oh, I fully understand. I sympathize with what you're going through. And let's see what we can do to do something.
Which,
that's programmed.
That artificial empathy has value in and of itself, but it is not a replacement for human empathy. And just to quickly close this kind of recommendation for our audience. So curiosity, curation, and that really comes back to this like intern assistant mental model. Whatever it gives you, you still have to curate, you know, those to help you towards your goal. It's not going to be a final output. And I think actually some of today's, so February 2024's, strength of AI is really in the exploration and ideation stages, and curation is key. And then third, context. I think the context of where you're using this, the context you're giving it, there's so many different layers and dimensions to this idea of context in AI. But I think that is this context building and context recognition is going to be a really important skill set for any design practitioner leveraging AI.
There's even more. But let me comment that, first of all, a lot of these technologies take over and can do a really excellent job of some things, and we should let them. So I'll give you an example from radiology, because one of the things they're really good at is looking at images and saying, oh, that looks like a tumor, or this, that, or the other. And it's better than most radiologists today, and soon it will be better than all radiologists. And so I've talked to my radiology friends, and who are really excellent at doing this kind of diagnosis. And I say, what do you think about this? It's going to remove you from that job. And their general answer, for the best of them, I say, that's wonderful. Because today I spent all of my time in a room looking at screens and trying to determine whether that's a cancer or whether it's just a blotch or whatever. And now I'll let the machine do that, and I can go back to being a doctor and going back and talking to the patients and really seeing the patient and saying, look, here's what we see, here's what we believe. And, you know, there are three different ways that we can approach this, but you're the one who has to make the decision. So let me explain the different ways and what that means to you and what the differences are. And they really look forward to moving their profession back to what they used to like, which is, I'm a human being interacting with you and trying to work with you. And I think that's part of what you're saying, Sarah, that it's going to allow us to show the human capacity. Because a lot of what we do is drudgery. We sit and we design and we do this and we do that, and we're not any longer facing with the real problem. We're doing the details of the solution. We'll let the system do the details. What I can do is I can. It's like asking my friend. I'm asking to do a task, and I know that there's somebody who I work with who's better at this than me, and I ask him or her, I ask for advice, and maybe they'll give me a paper they've written, or maybe they'll talk to me for a while. But their answer isn't what I need. Their answer is very helpful. But I then use that to craft a better response myself. So first of all, I've seen this in designers who used to complain, I don't want to use this system, I refuse to. I'm better than it can be. Programmers used to say that when the first compilers came out and automatic.
That's a tale as old as time.
And guess what? It turns out that they got rid of the drudgery, and they can now think about the larger components of the problem they're working on. There's one other thing I think it's very important to recognize, though, and that where we can take real advantage. You know the way we interact with systems today? You look at your washing machine, it has lots of buttons and knobs and controls, or you look at a camera, which has more and more knobs and buttons and systems to control, or our computers and so on, and we have menus and drop down this, and you have commands you can issue. That may go away. We may switch to conversational interaction, where we can say,
I think outcome-oriented design. Kate Moran and I are working on an article right now about this, that all of these nuances to get to the end state are actually going to become superfluous or not even needed at all.
But there's a better way of putting it. Don't say that actually are going to become. How about this? The design community should be the leaders in showing how we can change into using these conversations as a way of replacing the complexity of today's screens and stuff. So why not have the designers lead the way in actually doing that transformation?
You're right. And I think envisioning this world where that is the norm and it is better for everyone. It's more inclusive. It's more accessible. It's more efficient. I think you're right. I think that's a place that designers can play a very unique role in this changing landscape and evolution of AI.
Well, it's not just AI. It's evolution of the workforce or evolution of the way we think of the jobs. AI is just one of the tools, but actually probably to make this work properly, we're going to have to change some other things too.
Fair. You're right. Everything's going
to
change.
I think it's a really new opportunity to come out with entire new kinds of products and services. In a service, again, you want to describe the goal that you have and let then the company or the people we're talking to, or maybe the AI we're talking to, figure out a way of trying to get us. And we say, no, that isn't quite right. It's too much of this or not enough of that. Or maybe it's too expensive.
You know what else is going to happen? It's not just this kind of gearing towards outcome-oriented or goal-oriented design, but actually this dynamic design. So we actually are only establishing the constraints as designers, the things that we absolutely know need to happen. And then we let AI build an interface or a dynamic experience for that user that is contextually specific to their preferences, to their needs, to what we've learned about them. And so we're not creating the exact same user interface for every user. We're creating the constraints that we know the system needs to abide by. And then it dynamically changes for that end user based on what it knows. And I think that that is such a big shift in the way that a lot of designers think about what they do and what they produce. But what a fun challenge that I think a lot of us are going to be moving into as designers in this next decade.
You're repurposing it. What you're saying is, don't say, oh, all this new stuff, I got to learn it. Oh, gosh, what am I going to do with it? It's going to take away my job. I got to learn too much new stuff. Take it as, wow, these are powerful things that I could use, that we could use to make things that even better for people. So, but if we can only change the way we use it, so, you know, why don't we modify the tools and so that we can actually, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's an opportunity. It's not a challenge. It's not a thing that you should worry about. You should learn about it. Photography, when it was introduced, was a real challenge to painters. Because what painters did was they tried to pick pictures of people, pictures of the landscape, and they tried to make it as realistic as possible. And the camera got destroyed that. And people said, oh, what's going to happen? And it was a similar fight and this argument. But what happened instead was that painters just took the opportunity and said, okay, the cameras can capture this, that, and the other, but I'm going to show you the thoughts in your mind, or how I envision it. Or I'm going to say, you know, I've been watching people, and this person, you can see them from this angle, from that angle, and this angle, and they're doing that, and this. And, you know, that's what Picasso did. He showed how you could show that same person simultaneously in a painting and change the world of art. And it became even more accessible and more exciting, personally. And maybe that's exactly a good model for what's going to happen with AI.
Yeah.
But now you may change the topic.
It's beautifully ironic in a way, because I can't tell you how many workshops I've facilitated where I go in and I'm like, just forget everything we know today and think blue sky and think big. And I find myself, even in this new world, holding tight things that may not even have a place or need to be held tightly. And I think that skill set, practicing what we preach and thinking and questioning everything, and I think that ties into this curiosity theme we've been discussing, is going to be pivotal and is going to be the make it or break it, where we see certain products and teams make leaps forward while other teams are holding too tight to what they know today.
Yep. Got to constantly be learning, changing.
Yeah. It's like you both have said, it's about growing with it and seeing what it can do. And it does have a ton of opportunities. I wanted to switch things a little bit. You know, we're talking about all these changes, all these things that are going to happen with AI. But I want to turn things around and think about what's going to remain the same in some ways. What are things we can't forget about? And that's important. There are some fundamentals to design. And I wanted to hear what your thoughts on what's going to stay the same and what we can't leave behind as these new tools continue to grow and change the way we live.
I mean, there are fundamentals to humanity is really what I think this question becomes, yeah. Right? And we've dabbled around this concept of empathy, artificial empathy, and real human empathy. And I think, to me, my kind of quick response to this is the human part of our jobs and skill sets is not only going to stay the same, but is going to become even more important. I published an article with Jacob and Tarun about the anthropomorphism of AI tools and basically how people start to treat, especially generative AI, as a human and to have feelings and to be able to, even the kind of most severe degree being companionship, rely on AI for these more traditional human-centric behaviors and feelings and relationships. And what was most interesting is of course, the research and article itself, but it's actually reading everyone's comments after reading the article and them sharing their own sentiments of why, if they have the same behavior and potentially why they think they do. And a lot of it came down to them not wanting to lose those human behaviors. The more that they deal with technology, they're scared that switching between working with humans and working with AI, that they're going to forget to still treat the humans that they're working with that same empathy. And so I think that that's a really good anecdote of my belief of this human-centered side of our job, or humanity-centered side of our job, as Don likes to say, is really what's going to not change and actually become more important.
I agree completely. And I think what I hope we can do is stop focusing upon, say, the details of what the work that we're doing and how much we do and accomplish, but focus on quality of life. And that's something that people need and that designers are trained to do. And quality of life is what's really important. And we have to show how a company can improve your quality of life without losing any of the attributes to keep the company successful. In fact, maybe enhancing them. But, you know, when I use today's computers, it's a pain. Let me tell you, it's a pain. First of all, I have to reboot periodically to clean out the crap that's in the memory systems. And second of all, they're always updating it. And each update, not only do I have to learn new things, but oftentimes I've carefully set all sorts of settings on the tools I'm using. And a lot of them get lost when they do the update. And I'm hoping that our new tools will allow a lot of this to be done behind our backs. We don't see it, but rather it'll be a pleasure to go to see what is the mail today. I'll summarize. Tell me which important one should I answer? Or is there something that I've neglected and I really ought to get to right now? And that sort of thing. And it's the conversation. But once again, it's about quality of life.
I think what both of you are saying are really important. I think there are things that, you know, we can't forget, we can't leave behind. There are fundamental things we have as designers, the skill set of empathy. But at the same time, we have to evolve with the technology as well and grow with it.
I liked your last comment. I just want to expand it. It isn't that we have to grow with the technology. We also have to be some of the drivers to help the technology change to a way that is better for people. I don't want us to just be responding to what's coming. I want us to be one of the drivers for what is going to happen.
And I think we're the best position to do that because we're always thinking about humans.
And I think we are the best position to do that because we're always thinking about people. Exactly, precisely.
Exactly. Thank you. All right, Sarah and Don, I am going to throw some quick questions your way. And really the aim is to just capture your immediate off-the-cuff response. Oh my God, Don. This is not meant to stress you out. And just let me know what you think. So I have a few questions. Let me know what you think. First response, first thought in your head. All right, first one. Most important skill in a designer today?
Learning.
Curiosity.
And use the curiosity. Use the curiosity to guide your learning.
That's right.
Yeah, they work well together. Yeah, I agree. One word to summarize your career.
A complete accident.
Unpredictable. I think the theme there is it's never linear.
I've often thought about my career and made all sorts of plans, and it's never, ever turned out that way. What happens is some interesting opportunity comes that I never, ever would have thought of, and I say, oh, okay, boom, and I go.
Always keeping that door open, right?
Always keeping the door open, and some of them failed, but I learned a lot from the failure. In fact, you learn more from failures than from successes.
I totally agree. All right, next one. Something you've recently become interested in.
Politics and economics.
The history of our national parks. Ooh. I'm really interested in public land, and as Don says, I think it's a really natural evolving or expansion of a designer's mind to start to wonder how the things we experience today ended up being that way. So,
and I become interested in the history of the world. So let me violate the rules of these short answers or do a few more short answer that.
That's okay.
What is really important is moving out of the context of the particular skill of a designer to try to understand the way the world has evolved in when it's all artificial, all done by people, and how we can change it. But understanding the history is critically important, not because history repeats itself, it doesn't, but history determines the direction it's moving in today.
Mm, absolutely.
You know,
that's truly what designing for humanity is, right?
That's what designing for humanity is.
Next one. The most important advice or feedback you've ever received?
I'll start. Not everyone is as not sensitive as you. It's really hard feedback, and I am not a super sensitive person, and I sometimes deliver feedback assuming that person is kind of equal to my sensitivity. And I think it's really hurt my interpersonal relationships. And this is advice that I got 15, 16 years ago, and it sticks with me all the time.
My answer is when people tell me I'm wrong, and they tell me intelligently, because that's how I learn. And if I'm wrong, I really want to know, because I want to stop doing what I'm doing wrong and start doing it right. So it's when people criticize, but as a helpful way of learning.
Something you're still learning.
How to get along with people. I tend to be a nerd. I tend to jump right to the basic issues of the thing, of the problem. I don't do a nice introduction. Oh, how's your life today? Oh, I understand your dog is sick. How's it getting better? I say, why do we do it this way? Why don't we do it that way? And that doesn't go over well. And I know that. And I've watched people who are really good at this, and I've failed to be able to learn it myself. And so I'm struggling with that.
Something I'm still learning is to the depths of which I will never know everything within a specific area. Every time I think that I like really have a grasp on something, or that I have an opinion and I have a firm concept and I have a point of view, it changes. And I think it's part of being curious and intelligent is being willing to change a point of view when you have new data points. So that's something I'm still learning.
Yes, but I don't consider that a negative. I consider that a positive attribute. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So this one is a fill in the blanks. Our field is horrible at remembering blank.
At remembering that this field exists in a complex system of other fields and other opinions, other way of addressing issues, and that the designers are so focused upon their wonderful craft skills that they have and their wonderful abilities that they don't work as good partners with other people and other fields and other issues that could actually improve what they're doing.
Our field is horrible at remembering that we're relatively young compared to a lot of different industries and practices, that we are heavily evolving. We're teaching or exposing others to this concept and idea, and that a lot of people practicing design weren't formally trained in it. So we're young, and I think we oftentimes forget that.
And the best people in design are those who were not formally trained. That will be controversial, but I've seen.
No, I think
because
it's fair.
You need to know a broader view of things. And so what happens when you're in one field and you switch to the other field, the stuff you've learned in the first field turns out to be wonderfully applied to the new field. And so we ought to get more people with more general backgrounds.
Yeah, I completely agree with both of you there.
In fact, I'm opposed.
I feel like there's this common problem where everyone thinks that their job is the most important, you know? I think everyone experiences that, right? But you're both absolutely right.
So let me go, I gotta say.
Oh, no, that's all good.
Everybody thinks their job is the most important. And I think that's important that they think that. Because why would you be doing
that's
it if you
fair.
Didn't think
that's
it was
fair.
Important? But it isn't. All the jobs are important, and it's the combination that's absolutely necessary. I happen to be opposed to STEM instruction. Now, I happen to be well-educated. I have 2 degrees in engineering, right? And so in science and technology and engineering and mathematics. The problem is that those are separate disciplines. They're silos, and that's not good. And second, well, people say we want to have STEAM, which is to add the arts. Well, we want to add the humanities. You want to add about history. You want to add about, you know, we're a field that works understanding people, so we need to understand people best. Now, where do we get the understanding from? We don't get it from psychologists. Psychologists have their narrow cycles. I have a PhD in psychology, and what am I an expert in? In how the ear works. Come on, that's not how people work. And second of all, not from sociology or anthropology or political science. Go to a novelist. Study how novelists write novels, because they have to talk about people in a way that when you read the novel, you say, oh yeah, I know people like that. I love that person. I hate that person, etc. So we have to actually expand to know something about everything. Not you can't really know about everything, but you have to expand your knowledge, and that's where the curiosity and continual learning comes in.
Think about it. We need to think about it more holistically. I have one last one, and I think it's a good one to end on. The greatest strength of our field is blank.
Our emphasis upon people.
I would say the diversity of it. I really like that everyone comes from a different background. Everyone studied something different. There are practitioners across the world with different life experiences. And I think that makes it an incredible industry to learn from peers, and then also stronger because of it.
Overall theme of people, diverse people, humanity.
Well, humanity okay. includes more than people. Humanity includes
yes.
all living
systems.
Things
systems
and the
well.
Ecological system, because that all yeah. affects us. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So human-centered design is called HCD. I call humanity-centered design H+CD, because it's built upon the fundamentals of human-centered, but expanded even more.
That was Dawn Nerman and Sarah Gibbons. Check out the show notes for links to anything we've referenced so far, but also remember that we have thousands of articles, videos, and reports on our website about UX design, research, strategy, and even UX careers. That website is www.nngroup.com. And if you enjoyed this show in particular, please follow or subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. This show is hosted and produced by me, Samita Tenkala. All video editing and post-production is by the Larimore Production Company. That's it for today's show. Until next time, remember, keep it simple.